Hi, everyone. Welcome to Taz Talk, the show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast. Today, we're talking about episode 4 of the Commitment mini arc, which is the final episode. They wrapped up the story of the Do Good Fellowship. And how did you feel about it, Chelsea?
Well, Rachel, I'll tell you. I think it wrapped up fairly quickly. I know that we were approaching the end game. I don't know what I really expected, but I don't know that I was expecting like a villain to suddenly emerge. Like, I think it's really interesting the way that they ended it, and I know that Clint was saying that he wanted to do it in a way that was kind of open ended, and I mean, like, no one died, so that was cool, and I like that there was like a after credits scene. I thought that was really cute because that's so super hero movie.
Yeah, the little epilogue. Yeah, I'm jumping way to the end of my notes at this point now.
Sorry.
But that little epilogue. No, it's fine. I kind of opened it up with this sweeping question where we have to jump around. But that epilogue, it was implied that the nurse who was a member of the
Do Good
Fellowship, they were going to install the superpower implants in Richard, right?
I thought maybe so, but at the same time, it didn't, like, they weren't visually describing the scene of someone getting a I guess maybe if we think back to the second episode, they did start out in like a medical facility where they got implants and then they went to the spray tan booth. So I mean, could be the way that it was set up. I thought it was because he was recovering from his injuries, but you know, that's a really interesting point. And maybe I know, I like it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm gonna take it. I'm gonna run with it. I'm gonna say that's what they were intending.
Well, no, I think that he was just in the hospital recovering from his injuries. I don't know, maybe I was reading too much into it, but to me it seemed like, I don't know why else Clint would have revealed that, oh, it was a Do Good Fellowship person working on him. Like, to me that seemed like, we've got the situation under control over here, and then once you're recovered, we're gonna, like, bust things open again or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I took it to mean, because when they were in the ship and they were talking about, like, well, where do we go? Like, we can't just drop him off at a jail. Like, that's not how it works.
Why isn't that how it works? That conversation was really silly.
It really was. It was really funny. But I think that it was kind of calling back to that because it kind of implied that no matter where they tried to turn him in, he had people who were allies with him everywhere. So I guess maybe even if they had implied like, oh, this is a hospital jail or something, it doesn't matter because he owns the jail. So.
Yeah, that actually might make sense. I mean, what I was thinking was, like, they suggested taking him everywhere but, like, a police station.
Okay.
Which seemed like the logical first step to me, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But back to overall opinions.
Yes,
like,
yes.
I actually thought, I thought Clint did a super good job.
Yeah.
And I was, the way he, the sort of layout or composition of this story was really satisfying to me in terms of like something that's supposed to be a narrative and also like a game, kind of the game story elements. Mm-hmm. He starts off, it's like a really condensed little like adventure unit. It starts off with a little intro setup part. And then there's, like, a dungeon part that they have to go to and fight some bad guys. And then they go to the boss fight.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was really satisfying to have those kind of, like, God, I can't talk. You know. I give up on this sentence.
There was a rising action. Kind of, there was a climax. There were some falling actions.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like those standard elements of these kinds of adventure stories were just kind of condensed and fit in really nicely in a way that I thought was really fun.
Yes, yes. I thought it was...
And that, I liked that a lot.
It was very well crafted from a narrative standpoint, and I really think that the Fate system lent itself pretty well to what they were trying to achieve, which was just a more narrative-focused kind of gameplay. But I have to... Mm-hmm. And again, we're kind of skipping all over the place, but I'm going to agree with Griffin on this one, where I'm not sure that the Fate system will lend itself well for podcasting. Because I, like, as I was listening to the fourth episode, when they said that, I was like, oh god, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know if I could have gone 60 episodes of having to negotiate every action and every fight. Like, it was cool because it's very collaborative and it's cooperative with the DM. But at the same time, it kind of lessens the impact. It kind of detracts, for me at least, from the action of the story. You know how in Taz Balance, like, there would be these kind of game-changing moments, like Merle would cast the Zone of Truth out of nowhere, or Geralt mm-hmm. would just appear and stuff. And that's mm-hmm. that's the kind of, those are the kind of moments that made, for me at least, Taz, like, really stand out, is because these characters would do these completely surprising, wacky things, and Griffin would just kind of be like, all right, well, I guess I have to roll with that now, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, for me at least, that's appealing. And I wasn't really getting that quite so much with Commitment. I still, very enjoyable to listen to. I still really enjoy the characters and the story that they all came up with. But it was a different kind of experience.
Yeah, I agree. I was like, when Griffin said, I don't think we're going to keep going with the Fate system, I was like, thank God. Oh. But I can't really verbalize exactly what I disliked about mm-hmm. it. And it was... Again, I've said before that I really love Dungeons & Dragons, mm-hmm. and so hearing them play Dungeons & Dragons was particularly satisfying for me, but I'm trying to figure out what exactly the difference is, and I think the way you described it as, like, having to negotiate through combat might be what the problem was.
Maybe.
I'm not sure. I mean, because the thing about Dungeons & Dragons is that there's all these pre-established rules for combat, yes. and there's all of these spells and stuff, and the spells are... Those were the fun moments. It was when people would cast a spell that Griffin didn't know, and then he had to figure out how to make it work in the world.
Yes, yes.
And, or like something that he didn't account for. And that's where spellcasters are the most fun classes.
Yeah.
But I think,
I think another thing, I don't know. Another thing that might make it a little bit easier for us to listen to is because when we listen to the boys playing D&D, they're playing with things that we're already familiar with. So when you hear someone mm-hmm. casting Magic Missile, you're like, oh my god, I know what's gonna happen because my friends did that the other night. And like, it's like it's hitting a nostalgia factor for you. So maybe that's
why... that wasn't true for you when you listened to the Adventure Zone.
It wasn't, but by the time it was, I think, like, maybe familiar adjacent, because I was aware that it was things that people could relate to, or like things that people like would bring up to me, and then they would tell me it would be funny, so I would be endeared to those things because, well, I like this person likes this thing, I now like this thing, you know?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who plays with the Fate system, at least not publicly, mm-hmm. not in my life, anyway, other than the McElroys, so...
Yeah.
It could just be that I'm not as familiar with it, so I'm not as endeared to it.
Well, the constraints in D&D are satisfying.
Yeah.
And so I think when you are doing... Again, they had touched upon this, and we've talked about this, but the Fate system seems to be better for roleplay and like character interaction mm-hmm. and not as good for combat. And so I think the problem with combat is that it is a familiarity thing.
Yeah.
There's the lack of constraints makes it... so that you could do pretty much anything you want. But it is fun to hear, like, oh, there's that spell again, you know, like, I think some element of predictability in stories is satisfying. I mean, you can do a bad job and make things boring, but it's fun to be able to, like, in your mind, you can kind of work through the puzzles yourself while you're listening, and then they could do something that you thought of, you're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's what I would have done if I was in his position, but it's harder to make those... kind of assumptions when there aren't like a limited number of spells you can cast or a defined move set, and you can just describe whatever action that you want to take depending on your role.
Yeah, and that's not to say that like D&D is super limiting, because there's still like space, there's like room to play in D&D, but I think that, you know, there's comfort in boundaries. I don't know, that might be like a kind of lame thing to say.
Constraints,
but,
no.
Yeah.
Constraints help people think through problems.
Yeah.
It's harder, the more choices you have, the harder it is to make a decision.
Oh my god, yeah, it's so overwhelming. I think that if we were trying to play Fate with our group, we would be so overwhelmed that I don't know that we would be able to like dynamically tell a story quite like these guys were able to.
I think it's the particular group of people, if I'm being totally honest, because I've played like like I said before, I played Wilderness of Mirrors, which is sort of a fate-based game before, and it was a blast. It depends on, like,
how
many wild cards you have.
Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on how cooperative people are and how many wild cards you have.
Okay. I mean, I'd be interested to try playing it, especially after Commitment. Like, they made it sound really fun. I wouldn't record it for a podcast. But then again, mm-hmm. what podcasts do I even do?
Haha. It's the Fate system, or it's kind of those kinds of games where it's really simplified rule structure, mm-hmm. and just like kind of that you roll D6 die, and then you kind of go, it's like the outcome is scaled based on that roll. It was really fun for just being really, really wacky and doing like these kind of crazy one shots where you really, the sky was the limit and anything could happen, and you weren't like super invested in what was going to go on. And yeah, I don't know. That is where I thought that system was really fun.
Yeah, it sounds like you can play kind of fast and loose with...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, I think it was still very enjoyable, the game that they played, yeah. the story that they told. I do want to bring up that Griffin alluded to. We're going to be getting some news as to what's next in the next couple of weeks, which I think is very exciting. PodCon is in... Oh, God. It's in... PodCon's in like less than a week, so part of me, they have a Tacoma show on Friday, and then they have the Adventure Zone on Sunday, and I'm gonna be there. Funnily enough, I'm gonna be there.
Are they doing TTAZZ live?
They are.
Oh shit!
And awesome. I know exactly. Like, if I am able to ask a question, oh my god! First of all, I would probably like pass out from sheer excitement. Second of all, I honestly, what should I ask? Like. In my head, the first thing that came to mind was, like, how did Mary's powers work if she was far away from Addison and Flanagan on the island?
Yeah.
But I don't want to call them out on that, because that's, like, not important.
It is important, though. I mean, it's just as important as anything else. Yeah. Like, it's all a fake, made-up, dumb game. Yeah. Like, anything is... I think all of the elements are equally important and interesting, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to also put... I feel like that's kind of a bummer. So, I'm like, I don't want to bring down the funk, so to say.
You want to ask a question that's fun for them to answer.
Exactly. I want to ask, like, a character question, like, I don't know, pizza rolls or stromboli for Cardala. Like, there was, and this is kind of going off a little bit, but there was a suggestion on the Adventure Zone Appreciation Facebook group, mm-hmm. where someone was saying that they should do an episode of My Brother and Me, which is the McElroy Brothers advice podcast show for a modern era. Like, if they were to do a advice podcast show but as Taco, Merle, and Magnus, like, I think
that would be pretty wild.
I think that would be an amazing hybrid of a live show. Anyway,
oh geez. I think, yeah, that's an interesting suggestion, because I think so far they've been pretty careful not to cross streams.
I'm always really, like, conflicted. One, I'm impressed that they're able to keep, like, their gardens separate, but at the same mm-hmm. time, I'm kind of like, you know, this would have been a good opportunity to do a shout out to something else.
Well, it's because they don't want people who like Mabimbam but don't like Taz mm. to be listening to Mabimbam and go, oh god, they're talking about the fucking D&D thing again, yeah, or like yeah. vice versa, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's why they probably why they need to keep them segregated, just so they can have, like, they are trying to appeal to different audiences, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of just. Not by accident, but, like, the shows definitely, I would say, have differing audiences, even though there's a lot of overlap.
There is, yeah. And, I mean, like, I started listening to Mabimbam because of The Adventure Zone.
Right.
But you've tried Mabimbam, and you weren't, like, super into it, right?
Yeah, but on the flip side, I didn't mind when they did references in The Adventure Zone.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of liked it, actually, yeah. even though I don't know anything about Mabimbam.
Yeah. And all in all, it's a bunch of guys doing goofs. Sometimes they wear funny fantasy hats. Sometimes they don't. were there any parts of the episode that you particularly wanted to discuss? Because I have a couple of things.
Lots of them.
Okay, good. All right, let's dive right on in.
Well, this is not a particular... Oh, no, did you want to go first?
I mean, I have things, but you already started talking, so...
Shit, okay. Well, this is not a particular... This is more about the tone that the last episode took, mm. But oh no, the third episode too, when they first were talking to Mary and kind of figuring out her backstory. But the disclaimer on this is that I am not a superhero or comic books person, and like I've watched superhero movies, but I don't think I've ever read a superhero comic in my life. But from what I know peripherally, I watched the Batman animated series when I was a kid, and like I've seen a bunch of the movies. You know, like I know stuff about the superhero genre, and I love
cred under your belt.
I guess so, but I really like how frequently modern superhero fiction, and especially I think in the more modern era, ends up tackling these ethical concerns about like vigilantism and police states, and how much power do you allow your military and your law enforcement. Like that's what The Watchmen was about too, and like that's what this ended being up about. It always comes down to this conflict about how if you have superpowers, you know, there's this kind of adage of absolute power corrupts absolutely that comes into play. So it's like, once you have superpowers, you can do whatever you want to. So what do you do?
Yeah.
And how can you, if you have the ability to control a bunch of people, how do you decide that what you think is right is the right thing? And that's how supervillains appear in a lot of cases. And that's one of the things that I really liked about Dr. Horrible, is that Dr. Horrible's motivation was not, I want to hurt people. It was, I think that there's something seriously wrong with the way this country's being run. This is my proposed solution. You know what I mean?
Was that?
And that's the exact...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, that's kind of the situation here. It's like the Do-Good Fellowship ends up being... Ben Franklin's ancestor, the jure king of the USA, trying to kind of make a power grab. I think so.
Yeah, you said ancestor. I think you meant descendant.
That's not what I meant. I did mean descendant. Okay, thank you, Chelsea.
No worries.
But yeah, it was just kind of like it ended up being that scenario where it was like, oh, you've got superheroes and they end up being like in a really corruptible position because that's what happens. I don't know. I appreciate that level of kind of moral grayness that a lot of these superhero stories end up addressing.
Yeah, a lot of times it's like a practice of thinking about like these ethical kind of situations, and that's I think what the appeal is for the superhero genre things, is just because people have an opportunity to exercise like the elements of justice and like what is right and what is wrong, loyalty versus like you know, the right thing to do. And I think that's what I had to listen to the episode a couple times just because I had to try to get in my mind, so this is our villain, this is our main antagonist, what are his motives, or like what is his motivation, like why is he doing the things that he's doing? So, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but King Dick, his whole motivation for this power grab is that he is the rightful king, and he's taking it literally, not like he's the king because the king said that he was a king, so he's a king, and he's doing all of these things because the postmaster made him rich, so with his money he decided to start his own foundation that would further advances in a billion different fields, and because he's doing pretty all right, he wants to reclaim America because it's rightfully his. Did I get that right? Was that his?
I guess so. I mean, I think his motivations were, to the extent that someone trying to become the king of America can be, that they were a little pure. I mean, like, it seems, especially compared to the royal consort Martine.
Oh god.
Which super sunk my Martine Nadia ship.
Yeah. I thought of you when she was like, oh. All right.
Yeah, that didn't pan out. But it was interesting how his argument seemed to be Richard, not Martine. Richard's argument seemed to be like, look at all of the good that the Do-Good Fellowship has done. Like, I've had all of this money, and like, my family has had all this money, and we've been able to, on the sly, make all of these important advancements in, like, medicine and biotechnology and stuff. So, I guess, I don't know, it seemed like, he seemed insane, but not evil, maybe, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know,
it's one, like, thing to do all of these great things, but then as soon as you bring in intent, like if you do good things to do good, that's fine. That's wonderful. Like, you're benefiting man. Mm-hmm. But if you do good mm-hmm. things with the intent of, okay, I benefited you, now benefit me with your fealty, or like with your, like, by subjecting yourself to me, that's not so good anymore. You're doing it because you have this incentive, and that incentive is power. So mm-hmm. like he wasn't really doing good with the right intent. So it didn't really make the Do-Good Fellowship a steward of doing good. It actually made them kind of, like, were they really doing good?
I thought
good?
It was the opposite.
Oh, no? Yeah?
I think it was, like, he had a good intention, which is that, like, I know how to run this country the right way, so I'm going to take over so I can help everyone. Mm. But I don't think he necessarily would. Like, that's not necessarily the case. Like, you can do bad things with good intentions.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I think that
I agree with that. Yeah. Okay. You talked me down. I guess so. So is the real antagonist then Martine? Because Martine was the one, like, going all about it super hostile-like, or...
I guess I would call them both the antagonists of the yeah. story. Martine was more a strong-arming kind of character, I guess.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was something that was alluded to, and which was in the second episode where they the main characters got transformed. And Martine comes in there, and there's, like, people with guns. And we noticed that at the time. Like, if this is the Do-Good Fellowship, why are they threatening each other with guns? Yeah. And then in this episode, episode 4, Remy and Cardala and Nadia talked about that. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, yeah, I guess... I mean, they pointed out that they also recognized that as being out of character for the organization that they had joined.
Yes. I think that was really interesting how... In the earlier episodes, we were kind of like, man, this group's kind of shady. Like, what's going on here? There's yeah. definitely something going on. And then this episode, we come in and we find, oh, yep. All right. So that's what was bubbling underneath.
It's the same thing that happened in Taz Balance. They joked a bunch of times about, like, oh, so when the Bureau of Balance turns out to actually be evil, blah, 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 blah. Like, I think this is in our culture, I'm going to say, like, American culture, because I'm assuming that's the audience of the show.
Sure.
I don't know how far it extends beyond that, but, like, we have this natural distrust of organizations that are in a position of power.
No, yes, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, that's what our government is built on, is, like, checking the power of big organizations and entities.
Yeah.
And so it's really, like, it's a running theme in this show now from, like, being suspicious about the big friendly
organization that calls itself really good.
Uh-huh. Like, people don't believe that, yeah. which I think is interesting. And it's something that the McElroys have played on twice now.
Yeah. So let's see if next arc is going to have... a big organization and a big...
God, I'm really excited base. About whatever they're going to do next. Oh, I forgot. I wanted to go back to when you were talking about their big announcement that they were going to make. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take some guesses.
Oh, yeah.
And my guesses are that they're either going to announce that they will be doing weekly episodes rather than bi-weekly, or that they're planning on, for the mini arcs, instead of doing 1 hour episodes like they've been doing normally and doing, like, a couple of them, I wonder if they're just going to buckle down, they're going to, like, sit down together on a day and just do 4 hour long episodes.
Whoa.
And just kind of, like, get out one whole, because that's, like, when I get together with you guys, we play on weeknights, so we kind of, well, we end up playing, like, 3 hours anyway, but we try to keep it short.
Yeah.
But when I play with my other group in person, we play, like, once a month. And we sit down and play all day, basically. And we, like, break for meals. And that's totally doable, and it's totally common. And it wouldn't surprise me if they were thinking, we can just get through these mini arcs faster if we just knock them out in one big session.
That's very true. But from, like, a podcasting perspective, I can't imagine them trying to upload a 4 hour long podcast.
That's true.
with money zones. Like, that's nutso. Like, I can see that's them sitting point. Down for, like, a really long one-day campaign, but they'd probably have to break it up in at least two pieces. Like, the Adventure Zone usually is about an hour to an hour 15 minutes long.
Uh-huh.
So...
Except when they do the three-hour finale.
Except for when they do the three-hour finale. So...
So it's, like, it's not unprecedented for them to do very long episodes.
That's true. That's true.
Although that was, like, a special case.
But
you're right.
Well, and so the thing is, like, we're coming up to the holiday season, and usually, for at least from my recent examinations of like Mabim Bam and the Adventure Zone is that usually when it's around Christmas time, the boys kind of hibernate from doing weekly or bi-weekly shows. Like they usually end up playing live shows or they play like bonus episodes. So part of me is thinking like, well, maybe you're right. Like maybe they will do like these really long sessions while they're all together for the holidays. And then they'll just use that to like kind of auto update the website, maybe on a weekly basis or maybe really long ones bi-weekly. But Griffin was talking about it with the intent of we want to make this process go faster so we can get to the second season sooner. So yeah. I am interested. I'm hoping it maybe will be weekly episodes. I think that's a lot.
That's but, yeah.
But either whether
I don't know or maybe. Hmm.
Or maybe it's just going to be like shorter campaigns. Like maybe instead of like a big 4-hour long. But I also feel like you can't really get a feel for your characters or the universe if it's anything shorter.
No, not in an hour.
Yeah, like, I haven't listened to Taz Nights yet, but were those, like, very long?
Although, yeah, I mean, the characters kind of did come through in, it was about 2 to 3 hours of content for Taz Nights. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, Troth was awesome, man. But yeah, they weren't as developed as Remy, Nadia, and Cardal, and Irene. Like, not nearly.
Yeah.
You know? Although the boys also put a lot of thought into those characters.
Yeah. And I you know, as much as we say that they really enjoy the character development stage of D&D, like, having to do that another 3 times, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I think it'll wear. I think they might run out of ideas, also. I'm wondering already, like, yeah. I don't know what the fuck they're gonna do next time. I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving them enough credit.
they are very extremely creative dudes, but it's like, That's a lot of new ideas to be giving your fan base. All at once. Like, and we've talked about this a couple times on the show. Is we've kind of really bonded with these characters already, and we really bonded with the Tres Horny Boys. So to have to go from Tres Horny Boys to Wonder Triplets to whatever is next is kind of
Wonder Triplets. Is that their name? Maybe it is.
I've seen people like tossing it around, and I kind of really do. That's like good. It. Yeah.
I need something to call them other than saying their the names
commitment,
each time.
The commitment folks, like
the commitment crew.
Yeah.
No. I think for me, I liked their characters a lot, especially Remy, but I don't feel like really emotionally attached to them because it's only been 4 episodes and that's not enough for me. I didn't feel invested in Trace Horny Boys until 25 episodes into Taz Balance, you know?
I don't know.
There's definitely...
I'm pretty invested in Cardala and Irene, which I want to talk about Cardala a little bit later.
I want to talk about them too.
Okay, can we just go? Let's just go. It. Okay, cool. So Cardala, she can recall parts of Irene's memories. Like she recalled that Irene's aunt or grandmother or somebody named a star after her, and she recognized like that was an Irene thing. So I think this is one more thing in the can Cardala like see through Irene's eyes folder that is a thing we keep talking about, but she totally can.
Well, it's because the relationship between them is really strange.
Yeah.
And there was something that happened that weirded me out a lot.
Ooh, which one?
And it was that Cardala, after they're trying to decide, what are they going to do about King Richard? Cardala tells Remy and Nadia, like, I'm committed to you guys because I need to be around you or else I go back into the Irene prison.
Yes.
And there was, like, a lot of fridge horror in that because I realized, like, Cardala doesn't want to go back in the box. Mm-hmm. And Nadia and Remy are just like, yeah, you're right. Okay. Did they just, like, abandoned Irene? Is Irene gone? What's going on? It's really, like, really weird. But
that's what I really want to hash out. I want to have more episodes so we can keep talking about Irene and Cardala because... I mean, if Cardala can, like, be looking through Irene's eyes, then Irene is looking through Cardala's eyes, and she's seeing these two people that she probably was like, well, they're my teammates, so, you know, we have to work together and stuff. Stab her in the back. Like, it's something, and that's what I just want to unpack Cardala and Irene's relationship. Like...
Yeah, there's something fucked up about it.
Yeah, it went from...
In a cool, interesting way, but there's not nearly enough time to explore that
exactly.
In 4 episodes.
Like, when we first encountered Cardala and Irene, it seemed like it was something that, like, kind of like a magical girl thing, maybe, that Irene, like, would turn into Cardala at will. Yeah. Or have you seen Big Mouth on Netflix?
Nope.
Oh man. Okay, well there's this character that just like this I assumed Cardallo was going to be like a mentor to Irene, like that they were going to like foster each other up, kind of like a strange couple where Cardallo would like teach Irene how to be really fierce and Irene would teach Cardallo how to be human, I guess.
Yeah.
But
No,
in
they're fighting for the
they're
body,
fighting for the
and
body and I'm
it's
like, "Oh my
really
God."
upsetting.
That's so cool.
I know. And it was like, that was one of, so there was that, and I'm just like, holy shit, I'm listening to her say this. And then, like, Nadia and Remy, they joke about, oh, you like us secretly. And it's funny because Justin playing another Tsundere character, but it's also just like, they just accept Irene gone. They're just, I don't know, it was like really weird.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like, they're just like slamming this out. They don't have enough time to go into this in depth. It was the
Yeah.
last episode. They didn't want to, like, maybe even if they thought about it, what can they do? Open up that whole can of worms,
Yeah.
like,
Well, see,
in
but
the 11th hour, but
how fun would that be though if they got to a point where they could actually address that? Like they is that to say that they're never going to be able to talk to Irene anymore, like as the
I don't
three of
know.
them? Like I really want to explore this relationship so bad, but we just finished the arc, so I guess we'll never get to. So I guess I have to go to
I
Tumblr to just
know.
kind of hash out all my fan theories. Like,
Write some fanfic, man.
I'm gonna have to like do
And like
some
talking about, you know how
Evanescence
gr
like music videos to internal like turmoil and
Oh my
wake me
God.
up inside. And sorry, what were you saying?
I was just remembering in the setup episode where Griffin was worried about where he was worried about the way the tone of the show and the relationship, like the potential relationship between Nadia and Remy, which they didn't end up having that much of a relationship, actually. I thought Cardala and Nadia had more funny
Oh,
interactions.
totally agreed.
But he was saying, you know, like, I don't like that because I don't know if it's going to fit the tone of the show. Well, talk about not fitting the tone of the show if they have to go into this weird, like, sci-fi ethics problem of we have an ancient god trapped in the body of a real, like, a modern person, and they can't coexist at the same time. And it's just like, how do
Yeah.
we, what do we do with them? It's very
It
distressing in a
has
fun way.
a potential to be really dark, which I
Yeah.
love. I love that. Man, I wish we had more episodes to like investigate, to ruminate on this relationship.
Oh man.
God.
I loved when Remy said that he was like, they were talking about broadcasting the thing, and then afterward Remy was like, oh, can you broadcast my mixtape too?
Oh
And
my
I'm like,
God,
oh God,
yeah.
of course he has a mixtape. I love him so
Oh, that
much.
was so
Oh,
funny.
Remy. Adorable. And also when Martine got the laser eyes and he was all mad,
Yeah.
that was the
That was
best.
also, and that's I think what Remy's character was somewhat designed to do, to bring some levity to the
Yeah.
team, because Cardala is, you know, intense and godly, and Nadia is stoic and sciency, and they needed someone a little squishy to,
Although, yeah.
yeah, and
Well,
Irene,
Nadia did end up being a little funnier
she
than,
did. I also
I don't know if
really.
Travis intended.
And I think, well, maybe that's what Travis was kind of going for, someone
Maybe,
who is,
yeah.
and I guess that would be like Dandere, if Cardala is like Tsundere.
I don't know what that means.
Dandere, I think, and I'd have to like Google it to make sure, but I'm pretty sure Dandere is like you're just cold and awkward, and it's not that you actively don't like something, but that they're trying to get to, but it's just that you're cold and you don't know how to like respond to people. That's what Nadia kind of seems like, where she's just like she doesn't hate people, but she's just apathetic to them. Yeah.
I think you might be right. I mean, if we want to apply moe anime stereotypes to these
Oh God,
characters, then yeah.
my true colors are coming out.
Are we bad people, Chelsea?
Oh God.
I have another part that I thought was funny, unless you want to talk about
Oh,
something
go for it. Most of my
else.
notes are just about how much I love Cardala.
Okay, one thing that I really loved was when Richard. Oh, so there's the one part where things are popping off, and then Nadia takes Richard hostage, oh. and is like saying to Martine, like, you know, don't do anything else, or I'm going to blow his head off, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Clint goes like, "Wait a minute, I need to process this for a second." And like that, those are my favorite moments in the Adventure Zone, and I don't know what it is about hearing the DM getting surprised and having to figure out what to do, but like something about that element of collaborative storytelling is so satisfying.
Oh, definitely.
And it's not fun when you're the DM because you're panicking, but like, and I don't know if it's fun for the players too, because I don't know if how much the players realize or like you're too distracted playing. I can't remember like any moments in my own experience of like stumping the DM and being like, ha ha ha, ha eat that.
Yeah.
But like as a listener, something about that is so satisfying and engaging. And well, I just exciting. Love it to death.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Oh, because it's like a surprise thing. Like you as a player, like you, when you get to level 5 and you get to learn, what's that skill with the Hodar, with the space between the stars and Eldritch?
Oh, I don't know if it's Hodar.
Hunger, wrath of...
Yeah, the... Someone's hungry... hungry... it's the... I'm going to tentacle your dick spell,
there you
basically.
Go. When you learn a cool-ass thing, you're dying to use it. And
yes,
and when
yes.
you're, like, in the thick of things, and you're like, well, I don't know when the next time I'm going to get a... Or maybe it's, I'm about to get a long rest after this encounter, so I'm just going to pull out all the stops. And then you get yeah. to use this cool, flashy thing. Like, hell yeah, it's exciting. And for the DM,
this...
yeah, like the DM is like, we're only at level 5. These are just some hobgoblins. Like, they're just going to like bash it, whatever. And then they unleash their ultimate and you're like, oh, God damn it. Like, that's so fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. And this was an example of, because we, it, like 15 minutes ago, we were talking about how what was fun about D&D combat is busting out the big spells that the yes. DM's never heard of. Yep. But this is an example of you don't need to have spell casting to... surprise the DM.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because this was just like, Travis did something that Clint was not expecting.
Yeah.
And it was really fun.
Yeah. At the same time, though, like, it's... And going back to D&D, like, it's hard to do those kinds of things. Or maybe I'm just not being creative enough. And this is also just my inner angst. I'm a barbarian in our current game of D&D, and I was just complaining to Rachel that I don't get to learn cool, fancy skills like everybody else does. And
I told her she was going to end up going half rogue like Magnus.
I'm going to have to just dual class. Like, that's the only way that I'm going to get, like, different skills and things. But, I mean, not necessarily. I think, have to be a little bit more creative.
Like, yeah, but you're like, you do have higher than 20 max stats.
I have noticed that. Yeah, I am a little bit, like, more robust. And like, I'm not as squishy as everybody
strong.
Else.
Also, you can breathe fire,
once
Dragonborn,
a day,
so don't give me shit about...
once a short rest or something, I forget.
I think it's a short rest.
Yeah. I only get to be flashy once a day, so I mean... just want to be stylish. Who got the style points because they... Oh, Remy. Or something. They got like a...
remember.
They got like a bonus... See, and that's the other thing I'm not super fond of with Fate, is that I don't have the language to talk about it effectively, because there's so many different ways to do combat with the will and heart and
heart.
Something.
We could look up the rules if we really care.
Yeah.
If we wanted to be good podcasters, we would have looked up the rules so we could talk about this effectively. But on the other hand, the Macro has already said that they're moving on from Fate. So at this point, it's like,
yeah, we already, we also mentally moved off from Fate. Can I point out a thing that kind of confused me?
Please.
At what point did they call Flanagan and Addison Onyx and Conduit?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah, that confused me for like
a bit. It might have been way back. Like, I figured out by context
yeah.
who they were talking about.
Yeah. Well, because when Clint was setting up the room, he was using everybody's names, and then all of a sudden, Remy or Cordala or Nadia would just be like, Onyx, Conduit, like, what are you doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that yeah, also brought me to did everyone have code names? Because I know Mary was Space Cadet, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just like their superhero name, right?
Yeah. Did they get to pick superhero names?
Well, this is actually something that they talked about in the setup episode, but it kind of got dropped, where they had superhero names. At least Remy and Nadia did. Cardala was like Cardala. It was kind of a special case. Mm. But Remy was Springheel.
Oh, God, that what a good name.
And Nadia was... I don't remember what Nadia's name was. I only remember Springheel because then later Remy goes, Jump Boy, that's a great name. And then I compared it in my mind to Springheel.
Jump Boy?
But I think Nadia had a name... Nadia had, like, a superhero name. So
Science
that's what Space...
Lady.
Yeah, it's weird because the way... They never... Even though it was, like, people getting superpowers, they never got past the getting your superpowers in the lab stage, really. They never went out and interacted with the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, what... That's what superhero stories are about, is, like, yeah. There's a masked person, and then, like, the populace kind of knows about their persona, but doesn't know who they are. Mm-hmm. But if, like, Space Cadet Onyx and Conduit were probably... their names as a superhero,
yeah.
But in the context of this story, they ended up sounding more like code names for scientific experiments.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that we would get more of if we were to do more episodes of Commitment, is that
yeah, if,
they
yeah.
would have an opportunity to flesh out their like public personas.
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly.
If we think about the timeline of this entire arc, it's only maybe like 4 days.
Yep.
Like they just got to the Berg and
yeah.
they just got their powers like yesterday and they just mm-hmm. did their first like mission so that they could get to know each other. And then as soon as they come back, it's the final showdown already.
Yep.
So like when you think about it, like these characters, they've only known each other for a couple days. So yeah, they would need more space and more time to just, where do we go from here?
You mean in the Commitment universe or
I meant in the podcast. Next... It's both.
Another thing that they might do, I mean, this is a more of a minor thing. It doesn't sound like a big announcement, but I wondered if they would just skip doing setup episodes.
Ooh.
Like, if they would just, like, in media res, I forget what the term is, but just, like, drop people in. And, like, I think we would have figured it out if we didn't get the setup episode. If they just spent, like, 4 minutes at the beginning saying... This is what we're doing, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If we could have learned about their powers, like, in character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, even... Not to say that you should skip the intro post, but if you don't listen to the intro post and then you just listen to the episodes and then maybe you go back to the intro post afterwards just to get, like, context, like, flavor text, I kind of feel like that... You're right. Like, that's kind of a good way to go about it just because... You aren't distracted with your precognitive, like you aren't going into it with expectations of what these characters are or what they're going to do.
Yeah.
You get to learn about them a little bit more organically, which I think is a lot mm-hmm. more interesting, at least for me mm-hmm. anyway.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's hard in 4 episodes, which is the problem.
Yeah.
And so I wonder how much character we would have perceived these characters as having without the setup episode. And I didn't mind. Like, I thought the setup episode was interesting and fun. I like hearing them talk about the show. That's why I like TTAZZ mm-hmm. so much, too. Mm-hmm. Like, those are great. And the setup episode, I didn't mind it at all. I liked it. But it's more like, I wonder if they're trying to condense and save time. I wonder if that's something they would cut.
Maybe. Or maybe they would do, like, just a much shorter character episode and then... The second half after the money zone would just be them going into, like, the beginning of a campaign.
Maybe. Yeah. That's what the beginning of Balance in episode 1, that's what they did, basically.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, and even at the end of that first episode, like, those characters weren't well-defined until, like, episode 6
Not
or
at all.
7. So, yeah, it's I think they have a lot of decisions that they have to make with where the show is going to go from here. But it's very exciting to be in the fandom at this point of time. Like
it is.
Oh man, very fun.
Do you think, I have another question, which is kind of meta, in a sense, but do you think their decision to try to change up the format or whatever their announcement is going to be, do you think that was more like their own feel, that like coming from their own feelings about how the show was going and how play felt and their own, like what they wanted to do, kind of more like an internal impetus? Or do you think they got feedback or they were noticing, like, it's statistically, like, listener drop-off? And then, based on that, they said, like, oh, shit, we have to, like, rethink some things.
I was wondering about that, too, but I also, I'm not entirely sure. Like, when you switch from doing the thing that is your moneymaker, essentially, mm-hmm. to, like, a whole new thing, because you're trying to, like, develop the show and you're trying out new things. Like, a drop-off in listenership, that's kind of to be expected. So
yeah.
I'm not sure that they had, like, a number in mind or, like, a goal in mind of what they were expecting to retain.
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely
sure.
Maybe
they did.
I mean, yeah, but I don't know what that number would have been.
Maybe they did, and the drop-off has surpassed it, and they're like, oh, shit. Although, I mean, from my own perspective, like, people are still really invested in the show,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, at least from my perspective.
But maybe it's, like, a core group.
From my perspective, it's that people are still talking about it, and people that I know, you and I, for example, like, we loved Balance, but we're still here to support the boys, and we still want to listen to whatever's coming next on the pipeline, and obviously people are still going to be super attached to Taz Balance. Like, hell, like, I'm still cosplaying from it next week.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it could be a couple of different things, but I think, and I hope mostly, that what's driving them is how they feel about their IP and their the game that they're playing and the products that they're producing. Like, they talked about this when Taz Balance ended, but ultimately, like, they're looking at what feels right for them and right for the podcast that they're recording. Like, their priority is to make sure that they are having fun. Like, they're keeping in mind, like, what's a good podcast? Like, what's going to sound good on the air and stuff? But ultimately, it's going to be what feels right for them as they play this game or as they record this podcast. And I think that's super important. Yeah, like, if you're going to do a thing, you should only do it because you're having fun and you're enjoying it. Like, I don't want them to do this podcast or to do anything because they feel like they owe it to anyone to do it that way. I don't know.
I have two responses to that.
Go ahead.
One is that for their sake, I hope that the whatever changes they're planning are intrinsically motivated, and I hope it's just something where they examined their own feelings about what they were doing, and maybe they had, like, a cool idea of how to change things. But on the other hand, you saying, like, they should only do it if they're having fun. That's what we're doing with this podcast. That's, like, you know, stupid, like, us here, like, very masturbatory and just kind of, like, having fun.
That's the best descriptor of anything fandom-related. Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, we're doing this. We should only be doing this because we're having fun.
Yeah.
The Adventure Zone for them is a serious source of income, yeah. I believe. And it's, like, a job. So, on one level, not that I'm saying, like, you need to please the fans, so this is, you better pay attention to their feedback.
Yeah.
But it's more like, I could also totally understand if they feel like we need to make economically sensible decisions about the way this podcast is going. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's hard. It's really hard.
It is hard.
And it's something that I think you can find for anyone who tries to monetize a hobby, cosplayers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking
yeah,
at you,
yeah.
like photographers, I'm looking at you. Like, this is something that comes up constantly. Like, do you keep doing the things that you want to do just because, like, it's your hobby and you want to preserve, like, its funness? Or because you've monetized it, you have to pander to the people giving you your money, your viewership, your listenership. And it's hard. It's really hard to find a balance of what can you do to be true to yourself, but also keep that money, that good money coming in. Like, I don't know. It's hard and it's sad to kind of think about. And I'm not sure that I would feel good knowing that, like, the McElroys were sacrificing their creative intent or creative desire just to appease the folks who want to keep, like, Magnus, Merle, and Taco around if that's not what the boys really, really want, you know? Like, I want them to do their
thing. Yeah, and I mean, they haven't done that. They've made that clear that they can't do that. And, like, it's obvious that for Griffin, like, I mean, that's the problem with American television, is that it's, like, the entertainment industry is this huge money-making machine, and TV shows will be extended way past, like, their expiration date in terms of enjoyment and, like, artistic integrity and quality of the show, because it's still making money. That's why bad movies get made, because they know people will watch them anyway.
Yeah.
But, like, Griffin already made clear here, I mean, it's not something being run by, like, a huge evil studio,
yeah. It's still,
you know what
it's
I mean?
It's still them being independent, and they can still...
And Griffin, like, when they decided we're gonna end the Balance arc no matter how much you people will miss those characters, that was already, like, Griffin, you know, he knew the story that he wanted to tell, and, like, I think artistic integrity was high on his list of priorities.
Yeah.
And again, like, the change that they're about to announce is probably not going to be that big and might not warrant this whole discussion we just had about their artistic integrity, but I don't know, it's something that I think about, and, like, I hope that no matter what they do, they're having a lot of fun.
Yes.
Because when they have fun, I have fun.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see where we go from here. And
God, I'm so ready for the aliens. Please put them in space, Chelsea.
I'm going to be so disappointed when they don't ever play anything that involves aliens.
I hope that they do. Okay, see, I hope that they do, that they at least touch on all of the ideas in the new cover art, like, before we move on and do anything
Chelsea,
else.
Chelsea, you don't need to have aliens to be in space. That's the thing. They're definitely going to space. That we've established. But it's like, I don't know if it's
I
like
I want my Sherlock Holmes adventure.
I'm excited for that, too.
Yeah. Also, real quick, before I forget, did you notice that there was original music in this one?
I did notice.
Okay,
I noticed it so hard that it was hard to pay attention to the
words,
to dialogue during those parts.
So Griffin's still producing music a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
What a good boy, that Griffin.
Oh,
damn.
That Griffin. I know. He produces really well. And I love that Taz is kind of like his kind of pet project of him just being able to be like super creative.
Every time that he would say like this show changed my life and it means so much to me, and like I'd get misty eyed every time he says that. Yes. During Balance Arc, it's just like, I don't know, like we're not talking about commitment now, we're talking about Balance Arc, but just listening to that show, like, first of all, the editing is so good. It's like, I can't believe how dramatic that show ends up getting. Yes. Compared to what it starts out with, but like the how much Griffin loves that story and how much of himself he put into it is so clear.
Yes.
Throughout the whole show. And it's just like, it's so heartwarming. And to, I don't know, it's just like whenever he talks about like how much he loves the fans because that they like loved the thing that he made and how much that means to him. It's just like, it's really, there's like some of my favorite moments listening to the Balance Arc
it
and just
warms
hearing
my heart.
Griffin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
It's just, it's really like creatively rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very. Man. Fuck! Jesus Christ, what a good show. Can't stop thinking about it, man. I'm not over the Balance Arc.
Yeah. Like, even though we've moved on from Balance, it's still permeating lots of parts of our lives.
I know. Well, because we're fandom fucks, and when I get obsessed with something, I get obsessed with it.
That's too true, to be honest. Like, that's... I do, too. And I think that it will until we get the next big thing, until we get our next hit. So, season two,
yeah.
Ready for you.
I'm ready. Please, God, let it be sci-fi. Or honestly, let them go... I can't imagine them going back to Forgotten Realms D&D, because they kind of already defeated the biggest baddie that they could within that universe. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anything, like... If they went back to that,
could they do that kind of gameplay, but just not in a strictly fantasy kind of world? Like, could they do it in space? Could they?
Yeah, I mean, there are, like, I haven't played any of them, although I'm very interested in them. But getting into any new tabletop is time intensive and expensive.
Yeah.
Unless you steal your books off the internet, which I did not. I've got fucking a whole bunch of official Wizards hardbacks on my table right now. I spend my money on dumb shit, but I know that there are like space tabletop games.
Oh, I see.
It's like space themed. There are so many tabletop RPG specs. I don't know how good most of them are. D&D is kind of like the staple one, and it's the one that people know. Even like, it's like a nerdy thing that people know that nerds do. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like in the popular idea of what people do.
Yes.
But. I mean, you don't even need to do, like, high fantasy. I saw for Wizards published... They do these things... Wizards of the Coast makes Dungeons & Dragons, for anyone listening who doesn't know that. And they publish a series online called Unearthed Arcana, which is basically playtest material. It's stuff where they're like, we're kicking around the idea for this subclass. We want you guys to play around with it. And if you have any feedback, let us know. And then we can tune it before we make it, like, before it enters into the official canon or official rule book.
Cool.
And there was one Unearthed Arcana article that I saw that was like, you want to do magic and stuff in the modern world? Here's all our ideas for like wizard detectives and like all this stuff. And it was basically like, these are our ideas if you wanted to take the classes and races of Dungeons and Dragons and put them in like modern downtown New York.
Dude, that's
basically
super cool. What the hell?
It was super cool. Yeah. And like, it's really interesting. Like that, thinking about the way that the modern world would handle magic and possibly, like, exploit it is really interesting. I had my friend the other day was like, what if there was a story where magic
like, corporations tried to control magic the way that they control modern resources now. Like, the problems that we have with, like, oil pipelines and overfish farming and, like, those kinds of problems where big corporations are not responsible with the environment. Like, if magic was another element of the environment,
oh god,
how would it be wasted? How would it be tainted? How would it be polluted? How would it be depleted? You know, like... That's like a whole, I'm sure someone has written novels about this sort of thing. And so if they have, if anyone has a recommendation, feel free to send me an email. But like, man, it's a really interesting problem to consider. And I think doing a campaign based around that would be super, super cool.
Yeah, that's like a whole different can of worms. That's,
I know, think about it.
That's like a whole different universe to explore.
I know. Can you imagine, like, in the courtroom, a lawyer arguing about the way a company is using magical resources and how it's fine, the way people argued, like,
oil and electricity.
Lead use. And... Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, man, that would be neat. Anyway, that's my that's my piece on that, on low fantasy D&D.
I thought it was lovely.
Thank you. Anyway, I don't know if I have much else to talk about this episode, except I loved when Richard was giving his final speech in the boat and Nadia just, like, bonked him on the head.
Yes.
Love her.
I love her. That was so... Yep. And then also when Great. She bonks... Martine.
Yes. On the head. She's so no nonsense. What a fun character. I am gonna miss these guys.
Yeah.
Damn. I liked when Clint was, I think, as Mary was saying, like, you want me to kill thousands of people? And then Travis Both and Griffin them. At the same time say, probably millions. Yeah. That was really funny. I really liked that.
Yeah. Well, it's Remy and Nadia saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think that's super fun.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, I think Clint did a really good job with this campaign, and it was really fun. I'm ready to move on, because I am not a big superhero person, so for me, it was just kind of like, okay, I will suffer through this, because I love you guys. But I'm ready. I'm praying for aliens. I'm praying for aliens. Oh, man. And that's all I have to say about that.
Well, I think that's it for us this week. How do we usually end this thing?
I tell them the way that they can contact
yes.
us. Yes. Okay. Them being our three listeners. Hi, guys. So if you want to if you have any comments or feedback or questions and you want to get in contact with us, our email address is taztalkpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us at taztalk.tumblr.com, where you can send us an ask, anonymous or not. Chelsea, what's the Twitter account that we have?
I'm checking on it right now. it is at talk Taz. Oh God, I bucked it up already.
Chelsea.
So our Twitter is at Taz Talk Podcast. And we link links to the episodes on there, and we also I use it to track the hashtag the Zonecast and hashtag the Adventure Zone. So I can see what, you know, Twitterverse is talking about when it comes to Taz. I'm also going to be at PodCon in Seattle next week. I'm going to be cosplaying as Stolen Century Lucretia. I should have some fun goodies, and I'll be at the cosplay meetup at 1:00.
Goodies?
Well, you'll see.
I won't. Tell me after we're off the air.
Yes. And I think that's kind of it. We'll
All right.
We're waiting with bated breath as to what adventures await us and the boys.
Super cool. Yeah. A big announcement. New mini arc, I guess.
Hopefully. Or maybe new big arc. Who knows?
Maybe big arc. Yeah. A couple live show. Maybe a new TTAZZ. And yeah, I'm really excited for all those things.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.